Welcome back to our podcast, Charmed by the Set, hosted by yours truly, Kat and Claire. We're here together for the first time doing this podcast versus virtually, and we're here to delve into the TV of our formative years, right? What made lasting impressions on our young minds? What influenced us positively? What challenged us? What might have given us that ick factor? And most importantly, what drew us so completely to these fictional worlds that we wanted to create them ourselves? And yeah.
And we also met on set. We both worked on TNT's Major Crimes. And we were sitting in Video Village, chatting it up and becoming fast friends. And we learned we had so much in common and loved so many of the same shows that we wanted to talk about them. Yep. So this is another one of our favorite shows, Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls!
Yay! So Kat, tell us why we picked Gilmore Girls.
Well, it's fall, of course, so, you know, what is more appropriate with leaves falling than to rewatch Gilmore Girls? It's the season for it. And if you haven't experienced autumn in Connecticut, then Gilmore Girls is the place to do it. It's magical. And more seriously, I think this show was very pivotal for us as young women and young girls. We kind of started off when the show came out around Rory's age. We were both kind of going into high school or in high school. And now, wow, the time has flown by. We're close to Lorelai's age, or actually a little older than when the show first started. And so now we can kind of better speak to her experiences in a different light. So I thought, you know, what is more apropos when we're talking about growing up with the show than Gilmore Girls, which we literally grew up with and now are from the mother to the daughter, or the daughter to the mother, now speaking to both experiences in a different way. So yeah, so that's, I think that's one of the big reasons. And then I think also it was just such a unique show of its time. It was another female-led show, which we both love to explore and love to watch. And it was focusing on mother-daughter relationships, which Claire and I both have, fortunately. And also, it was about women reaching their goals, not necessarily prioritizing relationships. But that is a big part of the show, so we will talk about it. But really, it was about women who were either running their own businesses or reaching for their goals or getting into great schools. Lorelai and Rory are two women who have big dreams, and they encourage each other to pursue those dreams and talk wickedly fast and and have witty banter in the process. And so, yeah, I think that was the draw, at least for me, along with just Lorelai kind of representing a lot of the women that I knew as I was growing up. She really partially reminded me of my own mother, because while my mom was not a single mom, she was a woman who was pursuing her higher education when we were young. So my mom got her MBA and her MLS when we were kids. And same with Lorelai, who was going to school at night and then also working full time. My mom worked full time, and my mom kind of rose up to the ranks of her career, of like to the highest level, which is kind of what Lorelai has done and being the owner of her own inn. And so, you know, for me, I grew up with women who kind of said, like, the sky's the limit. And so I was like, yeah, of course. So I'm going to go reach for the stars. but yes, I think that for me was why Gilmore Girls was so important as I was growing up. How about you, Claire? What made the show so important to you?
Well, I think at like its most basic level, it was funny. And just like the dialogue was like wicked fast, but like super smart. Absolutely. And I'm just thinking about that now as like, you know, the scripts were like 70 to 80 pages. Did you know that?
I did not know that. That's insane. How is that even possible when it's 40 minutes?
Because Amy Sherman-Palladino made them talk super fast. That is why they talk so fast, because they had to get through everything. They were not allowed to change the dialogue or anything. And she had so much that she wanted them to say. And I think that's why we got so much personality.
Absolutely.
Out of all of the characters. And I don't think I clocked it at the time, because I, you know, only learned this later. But I think that's why we got such, like, witty, funny dialogue out of Lorelai and many of the characters and all of these, you know, pop culture references and references to, like, the books that Rory's reading and the music that they're listening to and
history. I mean,
yeah, and that's just nothing like that was on TV.
Not at all.
And then beyond that, just, you know, I loved Rory as a character being so driven and just focused on school and not at all, you know, focused on relationships, even though that's part of the reason why, like, she always had guys wanting to date her, because she was just, like, so driven and focused. And then I also really liked the fact that Lorelai being a teen mom wasn't really, there was no, she wasn't shamed for it, and she didn't act like she was ashamed of it either. And so it was just like a part of her story. And that was, we were just watching these two, you know, this woman and her daughter, and they grew up together. But they were also, like, we'll talk later about their sort of role reversal.
Yeah.
Which was the other, like, big difference.
Absolutely. Like, who's the mother, who's the daughter, at what time? And they're both kind of growing up together because she is so young. I also thought, like, you know, they do explore the idea of shame, and that, like, what was great is that you could see a single mother who was being very much like a force in her own life and very much had agency, though on her, like, parents' side, that there was a lot of, like, hurt and this projection of shame that she just did not take on, which I think is, like, the cool part about this telling of the story, is that she kind of was so sure of herself. You know, her life was not going to be whatever other people prescribed it to be. It was going to be her own, and so that shame wasn't coming into the factor of, like, how she was running her life and how she was kind of approaching her motherhood. So yeah, so I don't know. Like, I just digress, but I wanted to, like, speak to that, because I thought that was, like, a very great way of approaching single motherhood versus other shows or, like, Lifetime movies that were coming on at the same time. And it was very much in this, like, light of, like, pregnant teen, all life is ruined. Everything is over. And obviously it was not, especially not for Lorelai and Rory. But yeah, I mean, let's talk about Rory, though, because she was a unique character. I mean, being the daughter of a teen mom, but also being kind of very grounded and very driven and so focused, as you said. And for me, like, she kind of was like this kind of guide as I was going through high school and college of, like, what the ideal is. And, like, she kind of took that track. And, like, even with, like, her relationship, like, you just kind of felt like she was the one who had the head on her shoulders, and it was a great guide. And she reminded me a lot of my sister, which my sister will hate me to say for saying this, because she hated being compared to Rory, because she did get that a lot. One, because she went to Yale. They aren't the same, but there is a lot of similarities in the sense that they were, like, both type A achievers who personally think, like, had a little bit of rude awakenings when, like, the blueprint that was, like, given to them didn't quite yield the results that they believed were going to be guaranteed as, like, time went on, because they did all of the steps and they achieved all of the goals, but yet, you know, so many people didn't do those same steps and then got further ahead faster, and they were like, what is that? So I think that was interesting to kind of, like, see Rory's transition and as a character. And sometimes, you know, it felt like this was like the natural progression, at least in like the first couple of seasons. But then by, you know, fourth, fifth, and things were like going awry at Yale. And if you don't know, you should go watch it and then come back and listen to us. But there's a point in which Rory drops out of Yale. And I think that there was this like drastic change in her character, and it felt kind of like a little bit of a betrayal to like the audience. And was it a betrayal by the writers, or just the sense that that we thought we all knew who this woman was or who she was becoming, and it was like a huge shift of what we thought was going to happen, and maybe we lost our guide a little bit. And it, rightfully so or not, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I feel like in later, like now looking back and with a year in the life, mm-hmm. there's so much like Rory hate now. Yeah. And there's a lot of questions of like, is she a terrible character?
Yeah.
You know, because of all of these really questionable choices that she made, mm-hmm. you know, once she got into school and into like more of that privileged world. And I think for me, and also this was really before the whole like anti-hero,
yeah,
like character took off, you know, and
especially
so,
on like a WB show,
right? So I think for me, I was like, you know, this isn't supposed to happen to Rory. Like, she's not supposed to be making these terrible choices.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know how you felt about it, but I was very surprised that you expected this like positive personal growth, and it seemed to go the opposite way for her.
Yeah, I mean, I think while I was watching it when I was young, I was feeling a lot of those emotions, the very same emotions that you were, of like, how is this even possible for her? Like, she seemed like she had everything kind of going for her, and why is she like just wasting her all of this potential and all of this kind of privilege that she's been given, but like that could be so easily taken away. And I think there's two things. Like, I think one, the writers I think were very, very well aware of that and kind of taking that into consideration for someone who has been kind of coming from where she was as being looked at as like the symbol of perfection, that she was kind of given this like pedestal. You know, she's very demure, very mindful. I had to do it. I'm sorry. So perhaps, you know, she kind of had nowhere else to go but down, is kind of my thought of like this show, at least the first couple of seasons. Rory is working on her goal to get to Harvard. Like, that's like the big thing. And she seems like the most focused out of anybody to do it. Like, and everyone like says, oh my gosh, she's so mature. She's so smart. She is capable of anything. She can achieve anything. And so when you like, and I think a lot of millennials can like attest to this of being told by their parents that like the world is their oyster, that they could do anything, be anything, achieve everything. And then when the going gets tough, and that's not actually like when you do everything that you're supposed to do, and you can't always achieve, or you can't quite do it in the same way once you move out of like what I think we were kind of calling like her like bubble, which I think is just childhood and mm-hmm. and a safer childhood that, you know, that she had. I think that's when it's hard to cope. And I don't know. I think there's this sense of like there was so much expectations on her. Of course, where else was she going to go if she wasn't going to like stay at that level 100% of the time? And like, can anyone stay at that level 100% of the time? I don't know if they can. Now, I think there's ways in which you fall, and some people do it with dignity and some people don't. And I think the way that she did seemed a little counter to her character, mm-hmm. but I don't think that she could have stayed in that like like what I think was somewhat of a facade. Like, I don't think that Rory necessarily always deserved the like accolades of like, oh, she's amazing, oh, she's perfect. I think in a way that, of which, like, I think it was harmful. I think when you say these things to children that like you can do no wrong, mm-hmm. you are setting them up for failure.
Yeah,
I don't know. What do you think? How did you see her? Did you see her that way?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't. I feel like, you know, watching it at the time, I didn't, you know, I was just kind of like, why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. You know, why are you getting so, I guess, like wrapped up in like this kind of like Ivy League kind of BS
yeah.
stuff?
Yeah.
And, you know, she seemed to be so like considerate mm-hmm. and thoughtful, like in the early seasons. And then like it's like when she gets to Yale, she kind of loses herself. And, you know, I think part of it is she's in the Stars Hollow bubble, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. she's grounded. She's with her mom. She's
right.
with, she's in this town of like hardworking business owner. And then once she gets a Yale, I mean, first she's already kind of exposed to the world through her grandparents, right. this world that like Lorelai's trying to keep her away from.
Right.
For the first 16 years of her life.
Mm-hmm.
But then getting to Yale, it's like she's exposed to even more privilege and wealth. And she just kind of maybe like wants to be in that mm-hmm. world and starts making choices like she's one of them and not thinking about the consequences.
Yeah. Yeah. I think very much so. I mean, I kind of, if we can like track her trajectory, I think we start off in the first season seeing Rory kind of securely in her very small town of Stars Hollow among, as you were saying, like the middle class and kind of working class people. And so that's kind of like getting her like the sense of like, okay, hard work is the key to success in life. Like that's kind of like the ground zero of where she's starting. And I think that's what she's seeing from her mother. And then very quickly, she gets into this prestigious high school, which is Chilton, and then is thrust into a world full of rich kids. Also, now she's, instead of it just being like every other holiday or the holidays, like she's exposed to her grandparents' world every week. Like she has to be there every Friday. And then maybe even more, as she's getting to know her grandparents and being part of their world. And so I think she's incrementally, but through the first couple of seasons, being exposed to this like upper class lifestyle. And it really puts Rory kind of in between those worlds. Like, does she belong to both? Does she belong to neither? Like, I think it is a situation in which we are looking at her kind of trying to understand and navigate what is privilege, what is wealth, what is her place within them, like what is she owed, what is she not owed. I feel like no one's owed anything. But, you know, when you get into a world of privilege, sometimes you get a sensibility that you are entitled to certain things. And I think because she had exposure like that, starting with children, like because Lorelai decided, you know, because of wanting to give Rory the best possible a chance in life, I think she also exposed her to a world that she had walked away from. And, you know, for many reasons, but one being that she did find it to be a superficial world and a very possibly harmful world to someone who is what I feel like Lorelai valued, which was being hardworking, picking yourself up by your bootstraps, and not being pretentious, and so I think in some ways this show and I think Rory's struggle was about her kind of deciding which world she wanted to be a part of and who she was going to be. And I think what was unfortunate and I kind of the betrayal for me is that she came from a place that was very working class, very small town, and in some ways she was a lot more considerate of a human being, and then chose to not be that and chose to like immerse herself in a world full of like elite privileged people who don't have to worry about like being in prison because their parents are going to bail them out no matter what. They bail them out of everything. And maybe, you know, Rory was on the cusp of always being bailed out, but I don't know. Like, do you think that like Rory was just ill-equipped to deal with struggle because her kind of she had a safety net, or was it because, you know, she met the Logan and his crew of like super wealthy elite at that school, and all perspective went out the window?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting thing about Rory coming up against adversity, right? And I feel like she struggles when she first gets to Chilton. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a learning curve.
That's
she
true.
Is not as smart as everyone. She's not used to the, you know, curriculum. Mm-hmm. But she has this goal of Harvard.
Yes.
And so she, like, powers through.
Yeah.
And perseveres. And so then it's interesting when she gets to Yale and comes up against this adversity in, you know, doing the internship for Logan's dad and finding out whatever him saying, like, you don't have what it takes, and then her just, like, crumbling.
Yeah, though I do want to say, like, I do think that there were times where Rory struggled at Chilton, but, like, for, like, two episodes. she was able to, like, be at the top of her class. Like, it was just, like, her and Paris all the way and still at the top. So I don't, like, and then I think that, like, she had safety nets. Like, her grandparents were always there to catch her. Her mom was there to catch her. And Stars Hollow was always, like, there. I think there wasn't, like, a lot of failure that Rory went through until she got to Yale, because she was kind of, one, I think, to her credit, just a very good student and stayed focused. But two, because I think she did have the safety net and was able to kind of get by with all of her support team. Mm-hmm. And then you're there at Yale, and now you're exposed even more to, like, upper echelon. I mean, the thing is that Yale has, like, everyone, except that, like, here's the thing. There are, like, the really, really smart kids who are there on scholarship, who got there because they worked their asses off. They are actually, like, the most intelligent human beings on the planet. And they're the ones, like, doing the cancer research and going to hopefully one day win the Nobel Prizes. And then there are, at the other end, these legacy kids whose parents are senators and who are super, super wealthy, who got there because they were legacy. George Bush, but and, you know, they're not the ones who worked as hard as Rory did to get there. And Rory, I think, is sitting in between, understanding that, like, she might have made it to Yale. We kind of talked about this. Might have made it to Yale or Harvard if she had stayed in Stars Hollow High. She just would have had to work harder a little bit. We'll talk a little bit later about that. But, like, you know, she got to have all of the resources by going to Chilton to really push her to get to Yale and any other Ivy she would want to go to. And so she knows, like, that she had the access because of her grandparents to this. But yet, you know, she knows that she also had to work super, super hard. So she's kind of sitting in between these kids. And I think Rory has a choice to make. And I think there is a very clear understanding with the writers that she has a choice to make when Lorelai says, it's the episode that Rory goes to play golf with her grandfather, and she really has a great time and she likes it, and Lorelai is having a hard time with the fact that Rory is enjoying spending time at, like, this country club, and I think she goes, like, I had denied, you know, all of my parents' world. I just never imagined that she would want it. And I think that's the thing. Like, maybe when she gets to Yale and she sees the ease of which some people can live without the pressure of working so hard, maybe she wants it. And that's the decision I think we people who haven't ever had that kind of access struggle with. Is that like, she might be able to touch it and we can't, and we would never think that she would want to touch it, like Lorelai thought. But maybe we were wrong. And like that's where I think we're like thinking, is she a complicated or terrible character, or like or why people are upset is because her actual character is one that would prefer privilege over hard work.
Yeah, I mean, that's, and I wish I had, like, I didn't understand that the first time.
I don't either.
Like, it's just, it's so amazing to think about it now and dissect it like that and just realize, yeah, I think the writers totally knew what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, while the show does like a really great job of showing those like pitfalls of wealth and privilege, what I don't think it did well was the messaging around sex.
Sure.
Specifically, especially with Rory, mm-hmm. I feel like, because I mean, watching it the first time around, that's who I was comparing myself to. And I was comparing her journey to, you know, mine, I guess, in high school. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, let's talk about all of her relationships.
Yes, let's go on the journey through Rory's boyfriends and kind of her journey into her sexuality, right? And sex life.
Yeah. Yeah, so starting with Team Dean.
Dean, are you Team Dean?
Okay, so I was.
Yeah.
Like, at the start.
Yeah.
Because, and I think it's because I've always been, like, a romantic.
Mm-hmm.
And just was probably watching this show, like, waiting for, like, the love stories to happen.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that, I mean, there's a lot of, like, their story that seemed kind of like fairy tale, like the way he was pursuing her and the fact that he, like, noticed her. I mean, this has always stuck with me. The fact that, like, he saw her reading under a tree.
Right.
And she was so focused that, like, she didn't notice, like, a guy had gotten, like, hit with a football and there was blood everywhere and there was an ambulance called and she, like, kept reading. And that's what made him, like, notice her and be like, I've got to talk to that girl. And so I was like, all I have to do is read under a tree. I'm going to meet someone.
I know, like every like bookworm, loner's dream, like any kid out there who was like just like in their own little world and thought, oh, yes, the man of my dreams will just come to me.
Yeah, and I don't remember seeing any episodes where he like pressured her to do anything.
Yeah.
There was a real kind of like, distinction between him and like Tristan,
mm-hmm.
who was,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of
the bad boy, the
right,
rich bad boy,
antagonistic,
yes.
And like, you know, just yeah, showing that like that difference between like he seems like he would pressure her to do something.
Yeah.
Totally seems like that guy, and Dean never did, and I think that's why I probably didn't see, like, when they broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess they really did break up. But when he says, I love you, and then she doesn't say anything back and he just gets out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly, somehow that was, like, them breaking up. I think I probably thought, like, well, she just should have said, I love you back.
Yeah, whereas I found that, like, super problematic. You need, like, a little reminder. So, like, they had been seeing each other for about 3 months at this point. So it was their three-month anniversary, which is such, like, a TV made-up thing. Like, mm-hmm. I love TV giving us culture and being, like, three-year anniversaries. Every teen kid, like, go celebrate. But here's the thing. They go on this, like, extravagant date, and at the end, like, they're sitting in this car that he's building her, like, perfect, written by a woman man. but they're sitting there, and he tells her, I love you. And she hesitates and then she doesn't quite know what to say. And I think she says that, like, you know, that's a little hard for me with, like, my mom. And he's like, well, I'm not, like, trying to marry her, or like, we're not going to get pregnant by saying I love you. And I think that what the kind of, to me, also got implied by the end of that kind of storyline was that, you know, even Lorelai is like, well, I don't want you to feel, just because, like, you and your dad and I couldn't work out that, I don't want you to feel like you can't say I love you to somebody. And I think that's all well and good, whatever, but I don't think that the fact that someone can't say I love you back right away is a good enough reason for someone to be like, okay, peace, bye. You know what I mean? Like, I think that to me feels like pressure. That to me doesn't feel like consent. That feels like ego. That you can't, if you love somebody, that should be unconditional, right? It shouldn't be on the condition that they love you back.
Right.
It should be on the fact that, like, you wanted to express your emotions to them and they know it, and whatever way that, you know, and yeah, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt if they don't reciprocate. But the thing is that Lori wasn't saying that she didn't like him, that she didn't have feelings for him. But the fact that she's a teenager and didn't have a time, 3 months, to figure out her feelings, that he wouldn't give her that time, is one, on immaturity on his level, but two, toxic.
Yeah, well, and it's her first relationship, and it's like, give the girl a break.
It is. It's also, I mean, yeah, and it was like, what, his second, but also the fact that he, like, that's emotional blackmail to me, to be like, oh, you can't say I love you back, I'm breaking up with you. It's And then for her, for the whole kind of, like, the way that the next couple, like, episodes go, or at least the next episode goes, is that, you know, she's, like, heartbroken, but then you realize everybody, like, everyone's, like, they hate him. They're, like, all, like, oh, he's terrible. Like, remember, like,
right.
Luke goes and, like, almost pummels him. and, you know, and then they're making him, like, they make him out to be the bad guy, and then, you know, then I guess the twist is supposed to be like it was actually her who initiated this breakup. But it's not. It really isn't. And I think that to make it on any level her fault is, like, kind of, like, in the shallow sense of the word, victim blaming. But I think the sense of, like, he still broke up with her when she didn't say I love you back. And when she's, you know, like, yes, I think, you know, rightfully so, like, he shouldn't have been villainized because it's teenagers and they break up. Like, that's weird that, like, you all are just going to defend this girl, that you put her on a pedestal. But, like, but also I don't think he should have gotten the sense of, like, oh, he's off the hook because he broke up with her after not saying, like, her not saying I love you. I think if you're in, like, they're not mature, they're teenagers. But if you're trying to be in a relationship, you should give the other person space and time to find when it's right and ready, when they're ready. It's just like sex. Like, if one person is not ready to have it, you shouldn't force it. So if one person is not ready to say I love you, don't force it. Tell them I love you, and then give them the space and the air to accept that, and then tell you when they're ready. It's like that's kind of how it goes. And if it's not how it's going, re-examine your relationship.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of registered that when I was that age, when I was watching that. I felt like it was unfair to Rory to put the pressure on her that she had to say I love you back. And then, you know, eventually she does. And I think it was because she was kind of pressured on another side to be like, well, you can say it. You don't have to be afraid to say it. And I think that's right. You don't have to be afraid, but also you don't have to say it until you're ready to say it. Like, 3 months is really a short amount of time to say I love you to somebody.
Yeah, totally. And I'm sure about that moment where she does say I love you and they get back together. I'm sure I thought that was like amazingly romantic, where she was like, I love you, you idiot.
I know. But I mean, you know what? Young love, like, it's totally fine. Like, they're, I'm sure.
TV.
Yeah. And also, like, I think when I, like, had my first boyfriend, like, and you get, like, all of that, like, I don't know how you felt, but, like, this, like, sense of, like, maybe, like, you're sick to the stomach. It's, like, some people, like, describe it as butterflies. And then your heart is, like, ripping out of your chest. And you don't know what you're, like, feeling. Like, it's kind of, like, a weird, confusing thing. And I think it's easy to be like, yeah, that's love. And it might be. But it's also, like, hormones. And it's also this sense of, like, you're starting to make the first connection with someone for the first time. And, like, there's a lot of emotions going into that. And I think, yes, love is there. But love is when you get down to it, like, kind of, like, it's kind of this weird term that can be thrown around very easily and then also can be taken very seriously. It just depends on where you are and where you're at in a relationship. But I think rightfully so for Rory to be cautious. Mm-hmm. When she's 16, her mother got pregnant at the same age as she is now, and she's nervous. And why can't she be nervous? We all were nervous at that age with new relationships. And I still get nervous at this age with new relationships. So, like, come on. I mean, that's how it goes for kids. But I think it wasn't the message I thought was the right one to send to myself I think at the time I was only like 13 or 14 watching it and feeling like, so after 3 months I have to say I love you or that's gonna be it. Like, you know, I think it gave timetables on things that shouldn't have had timetables.
And for me, I'm pretty sure because, you know, my whole idea of relationships and love was skewed by, like, my parents,
mm-hmm.
and they got engaged after 3 months. So for me, I was like, well yeah. I mean, at 3 months, you should know if you love them.
Yeah, see?
Of course.
Throw away everything I just said. Because you know what? I think some people, no, I mean, not in all seriousness, but I'm just saying, like, I think sometimes it is true that you can say that. And it could be, and they've been married for how long?
42 years.
See, so it's possible. It's totally possible. And also, I would have to, I mean, my parents got, I think, married a year after they met each other. So.
Yeah, I mean, there really is no.
There's no time frame. But I also.
There's no formula. It's.
Yes.
Totally dependent on the person. But speaking of breakups,
yes.
Their second breakup yes. is a lot different.
It is.
And it has to do with Jess, who I hated. So much watching the show. I was so Team Dean because he was the good boyfriend.
Oh my gosh.
He was the dependable. And then Jess rolls in from wherever. Was it California?
Yeah, might have. Well, no, his parents, it was New York.
Oh, New York. That's right.
Yeah, his mom.
Right. From New York. And he's like this angry, brooding.
I loved.
Always fighting with Dean and just, you know, and I saw where it was going.
Yeah.
And I just really didn't want Rory to, like, ruin what she had
you
with
were,
Dean.
Like, still stuck in your boy next door phase.
Totally.
And I was so beyond the boy next door phase because I had my own kind of boy next door happening at the same time. And it was not attractive to me. It was he was nowhere near on Dean's level. So maybe if he was, I would have been like, yes, that's great. Because Dean actually made a lot of effort in that relationship. My Dean would just show up at like 10 p.m. at my house and be like, hey, where's Kat? And we would just like sit in my basement and watch movies or TV. And that was it. Like, I, you know.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as romantic. But I'd have to say when Jess rolls into town, with his little dark horse. I just like loved it because, one, I was already sick of Dean. He was not on Roy's level intellectually. He didn't even want to be kind of in her sphere of like bettering himself to where she was going to go and where she was going to be. I think she was outgrowing him, and he was, even though he was from Chicago, which is my hometown, like he was very small town minded, in my opinion. And like that episode where she has to demonstrate how, like, who was it? Was it Doris?
Donna Reed.
It was like, yeah. So when she had to like pretend to be Donna Reed and like show like how pivotal she was within the industry, within the television industry, and within her own show, and that like the idea of just like a 50s housewife, like just cooking and cleaning and tending to his every need, which he thought was the greatest thing ever. And he was like, yeah, I would love that. What's wrong with that? Like the moment he said what's wrong with that to the Gilmore Girls, I knew he was out of the picture. Like, okay, she did this demonstration. I hated that episode, but she had to do this demonstration for him to like accept, okay, maybe, you know, women have more to offer.
Yeah, that's awesome. I found that most people hate that episode.
Yes, it was value. But like the fact that he did not already understand that or have that sense, and then Jess comes into town and he's like talking to her about the same books, like they've read the same books already, that there's notes in the margins that he's giving her. That was the most romantic thing ever, to put notes in the margins of the book. And so I'm just like, they spoke each other's language, even though they were kind of coming from different, you know, I guess, experiences at that point. Like Jess was obviously, you know, coming from a broken home. Like, yes, I mean, they kind of both technically come from a broken home, but like hers is more intact because she has wealthy grandparents and their grandparents are supporting her. But also that like he's very angry, I'm sure rightfully so, he has to live with Luke. I would be angry because it's one freaking room, like you get no privacy, and then you have to work every day, and so, but all to say, like, he just, they were, Dean and Jess were both immature because they're kids, and he didn't really know how to treat her. And I was upset with the way that he treated Rory, but I thought that if he could just get it together, they were the most, like, compatible. And I also wanted Rory to, like, step into her bad girl stage a little earlier, mm-hmm. like, with Jess, and, like, just be slightly more reckless than just, like, getting on a bus to New York and like getting, buying a record. Like, that is not the bad girl I wanted. And like, I think it, and they reserved it for Yale. So we'll go on to talk about her love life at Yale. But I thought that like Jess was just the right fit, the wrong time, right?
Right, as we see in like later seasons,
yes.
like he grows up and
yes.
he's like a writer and
mm-hmm.
he's totally her intellectual
equal, yes.
and
also just like they speak each other's language. They can quip back and forth where the Dean could not. He could not. He was like, like a deer in headlights. What? And I was just.
And he didn't want to. That
he didn't
was the
want
other
to.
Thing. Like you see in later seasons, he gets married and like has a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
And, like early. That's
yeah.
what he wanted. That was his.
Yeah. And there's that saying that Rory rated for marriage, but it just wasn't her own.
Right.
And so, you know, and like he that's what he wanted. He knew that Rory was going to outpace him. And I think she did. She outgrew him. She outpaced him. I don't know why she went back to him for that little stint. That was, ugh. That's the start of the shift for me, for Rory's character. But like,
totally.
Before we even get to that, I think, you know, ending our conversation on Jess, I think what was the beginning of the end for them was that moment in the bedroom where they're at the party.
Ugh.
And if you guys don't remember that episode, Rory goes upstairs to look for Jess. Jess has just found out that he's not graduating
high school because he's missed more than like 40 days. Yeah. Or something insane.
Exactly. And then he has the right to be upset about it. But like, dude, you were the stupid one who just didn't show up at school. So why would you think you were graduating? You just didn't go. You like went to your job at Walmart.
And he doesn't have the intellectual, like, or the emotional
maturity
to talk about it,
yeah,
to share his feelings.
Exactly, yeah.
And so he's just, like, grunting and just won't talk to her.
In the bedroom, they're on the bed, yeah, and she's trying to figure out what's going on, what's wrong, and he, like, starts kissing her, and they just start making out at first, and she's kind of, like, making out with him, but then she's like, this is getting a little bit too much because he's pawing. He's starting to paw, which I wanted maybe that scene to go a different way. But, of course, it's the times. It was early 2000s, and it's Rory.
Right.
So she's like, stop. And he doesn't stop the first time. And then she has to say stop again, and he does. But he's, like, angry.
Right.
And he storms out, right?
Right. Well, no, she does.
Oh, right.
She's the one who's like, I don't know what I did. And he's like, oh, I didn't even ask you to come up here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what I did. And then she goes down the stairs, runs into Dean, and she's crying.
Right.
Stupid.
And so then
Dean, you have
he does.
Mind your own business.
But he's still in love with Rory. But then, so then he interprets it that Jess, you know.
Yeah. Crossed a line.
S-A-ish her, right? So, and then they get into a fight. And I think the question is like, was it assault?
I don't think so. I didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I feel like a lot of times, guys will just see how far they can go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not great if they don't stop when you tell them to. But he didn't, like, force her. He didn't keep going.
Right.
Too long. You know, I think, and I don't want to excuse his behavior because he had all this stuff going on. But, yeah, he, I feel like he handled it. He did something that maybe he would not have done had he not had this, like, really
bad day.
Really bad day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I know that's a big debate of, like, is it assault? I just don't think that qualifies.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's not like, I think these things get complicated. I think we're all, like, when we're in an intimate situation with anyone, like, there's always a negotiation going on. And so there is obviously a line, and the line is no,
right.
And stop. And yes, he didn't the first time, but I also think, you know, to understand, like, these are kids negotiating what it's going to be. But, you know, I think what was evident there was that Jess was not ready to be in the relationship, especially with Rory,
mm-hmm.
especially at that point in time. Rory might have been, she had the more, had already had the relationship with Dean, so kind of understood how a good relationship works and was hoping to have that same level with Jess, but he couldn't meet her there.
Right.
And she deserved to have someone who could meet her there. And so it was right guy, wrong time.
Yeah.
And she wasn't willing at that point in time to, like, lower her standards or lower her level and, like, be the bad girl, which it would have been fun for, like, an episode or two when the consequences are less. And I would have loved to see that, but that's me rewriting something that did not occur.
Yeah, like what if she had actually just like gone away with him when he showed up at her dorm at
Yale? Yes, or something. Like,
go to New York and like work together and write and
But I think there was something that they were doing, and especially with just like culturally and the way that television was being written, and then especially with Rory's character, that they were kind of like painting her out to be the good girl. And there was this like idea that like not having sex made you the good girl.
Yes.
And I think that, that it was so evident in that scene where Paris, they're right before they're going to graduate Chilton. Paris has sex with her boyfriend, which is perfectly acceptable to do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's their teenagers. She has a boyfriend, and she has sex for the first time, and then she finds out that she doesn't get into Harvard. This is Paris. And she goes and talks to Rory about it, and she's crying, and I think it's wrapped up into, like, you know, the emotions of everything, but, like, one, not getting into Harvard, which was, like, her biggest dream, to also feeling like, you know, the weight of just having this experience. And I think there's a sense of like, should I feel ashamed about it or not? And she thinks that Rory has already had sex with Dean.
Oh no, it's with Jess.
With Jess. Oh, yeah. Okay. With Jess.
Because obviously, if you were with Jess, you would be having sex with him because, obviously. Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
So much hotter than
Dean.
See?
Oh, yeah. See, at least you understood the assignment of, like, why Jess came into the picture.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yes. Like, why wouldn't you? But anyway, so Paris assumes that she's already had sex, and then Rory says, no, she hasn't. And then... Do you want to?
And Lorelai is like standing outside the door,
listening,
eavesdropping. And when she hears that Paris had sex, but Rory didn't, she says, I have the good kid. Which, and, like, ruined, like, I mean, it was ingrained in my brain from that moment on. I was like, okay, good girls don't have sex with their boyfriends. And I don't want to be a bad girl. So,
yeah. I think that's, I feel like even in like a female-led show, even in a show that's led by a woman, that there's still this patriarchal sensibility and this idea of like either the virgin whore dichotomy, and it's like it's either one or the other, there's nothing in between. And so Rory is good because she doesn't have sex with her boyfriend, and Paris is somehow bad because she did have sex with her boyfriend. And I think that it's like it throws, especially when you're looking at this character as like your guide, it throws your perspective of like how to function in the world. It skews it in a way that's like leaning towards kind of like this puritanical view of the way that we express ourselves, and females are allowed to express their sexuality. So I thought in that sense, everybody gets to have their ideas of it, but I think that was one that impressed an idea that could have somewhat been damaging to us.
And they punctuated it even more. I think actually when they are having that conversation, it's before she got the acceptance, because it's when they're doing that, they share that valedictorian speech.
Yeah.
And Paris has just like lost her
mind.
Oh,
right.
She worked so hard, and she draws that parallel in that speech of like, I had sex and I didn't get into Harvard, and she didn't have sex and she did.
Right.
And so it's not just like, having sex is bad, but also you're going to be punished.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to get your dreams if you have sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That, and so I think even when it's a show about like a single mother making it through. Like, I think the shame factor or like your dreams are going to be ruined is still kind of laced it over this whole show, because the sense that like, oh, well, Lorelai could have been more if she didn't have Rory, and Rory won't be anything if she has sex, because, or she won't get her dreams or her goals because if she does. And I think that equating those two things are diabolical and ridiculous.
And you mentioned about how they took Paris's character.
Yeah, I did. I think, you know, and I think the sense of like right after, you know, she has sex, then it's like, oh, the gates of hell are open or something, or, you know, or like all like Pandora's box, like we can do whatever we want with her character sexually because she had sex with a boy she was committed to. And so then now, like when they go to Yale, she starts having sex with like a wildly inappropriate person, the like really old, like it wasn't even like a TA. It was like a really old professor, and she's barely 19. Like, I think that was not, and like, and I think, you know, pretending like she had agency within that relationship is ridiculous. I think at this point in time, especially with Me Too, we would realize that like there was a huge power dynamic in that, and that he was abusing her. But like, we didn't even get that idea when we were watching the show, you know?
Also because Paris is such a like formidable personality I didn't even think of that. Plus, no one was like talking about that, about those power imbalances between like really much older men, or even not that much older, like late 20s and late teens, like that whole thing. So it didn't even register to me that could be like a situation where she would be taken advantage of.
Yeah, but she was. And even though she has a big personality, I think it was a detriment to that character and to our understanding of what those relationships could be. Just because you have sex doesn't mean you have to have sex with everyone else that comes into contact with you who wants to have sex with you. But I think there's this sense of like, after having sex the first time, if a woman does as a character on a show, now she's up for grabs, you know? And I think that hopefully has changed, but maybe not. And I think also that was the messaging that I think we received. And especially with Paris, like then it going to like that professor who, you know, we didn't even get to have a conversation about how inappropriate it was for her and how at risk she was. And then, you know, did she even get to process it in a way that was healthy?
Because he dies.
It's ridiculous. So I feel like, you know, they did not do the best with having addressed sex, especially for Rory. But anyway, that's our show.
But don't worry, we will continue this conversation and how it leads us to Lorelai and the ups and downs of her love life in part two. Charmed by the Set is executive produced by Kat Davidson and Claire Almond, sound engineered and edited by Kat Davidson, with original music by John Bell. Find out more about our podcast at www.charmedbytheset.com and follow us on social media at Charmed by the Set.